Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got Jim coming up, Jim Traber at 9:30. We'll talk about all kinds of different topics with him. I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on what happened last night inside Paycom Center. I know Jared's down. He's a down man about the Thunder blowing a golden opportunity. I have a question about this. Are we going about this all wrong? From a who's playing standpoint, are we doing this wrong? I'll just ask. Masters week, Tiger, is he really going to play? Looks like it. Who do you want to see win? So if you could, realistically, like I can't sit here and go Fred Couples, because Fred Couples isn't going to win. But out of the guys that actually realistically kind of have a chance to win or have a really good chance to win, who would you like to see win? And then, of course, we'll pick our three. I'll have to make picks. You can wait, Jared, until Wednesday. But obviously, I have to make my picks and a dark horse, which dark horse is constituted by somebody outside the top 25 in the official the world golf rankings. So that's where we're at there. Recap what happened on Saturday with the final four. Who do you like tonight? And then I mentioned the Thunder. Oh, my gosh. It went from euphoria to the doldrums in about 4 hours yesterday after Detroit won, and then inexplicably Oklahoma City blows out Phoenix. So that's what we got. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. Paragon Communications app is free to download. And it's got everything. It's got three radio stations. It's got the Penny News. It's got Big Elk and Paragon TV. Everything we got right there at your fingertips in the Paragon Communications app. And also, the Skinny on Sports podcast is available. iTunes, KADSAM.com. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and listen that way. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
Better. I'm not as stopped up as I have been.
Oh, yeah?
So that's good.
That's good. Good for you.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm real well. Ready to get another week going.
This is
still scrambling, thinking, what am I going to do?
Here we are.
This show, Tuesday through Friday.
This is the best week of the year, man.
Yes,
it is. We've gotten there. We got the game tonight.
Yes.
The Masters starts Thursday, for me anyway. Now, I know some people are going to talk about college football starting. That's a great week, too. There's a bunch of different weeks throughout the season, or throughout the year in sports. But for me, for my money, this is when you know what you get to realize this week?
What's that?
Jim Nance has the coolest job on the planet.
Sure he does.
He heads from New Orleans to Augusta and gets to hang out there. So this is
yes, that is
kind of hating.
He is. I don't think anyone's arguing that.
No, it's a great week for that guy. That's for sure. Let's go back to Saturday. Two good games. You know, Villanova got way behind early. KU, man, that Kansas ain't losing. If that Kansas shows up, and it was a little bit of a carryover from that second half barrage against Miami, but then you had. Villanova made some runs, made an interesting, it ends up being a double-digit win, ends up being a game that the lead never changed. But there was still some intrigue with 3 or 4 minutes left as Nova kind of closed the gap a little bit, but I don't know if you'd ever call it seriously threatening the Jayhawks as Abaji started out, 4 of 4 from three. McCormick was awesome down low. He got in a little foul trouble, and I think that's part of the reason why Nova was able to kind of chip away at that lead a little bit. But when he was in there, he demanded so much attention that either he scored or was able to free up those other guys. And that version of Kansas is top-notch. Jayhawks, and they looked awesome in that first game on Saturday.
And that's what I expected. I expected that team to do what they did and to take care of business, for lack of a better term. And it certainly
helped for Justin Moore not to be there. You know, that we talked about that on Friday, the blown opportunity that Kansas had because Villanova, maybe not their best player, but their most athletic and probably their best pro prospect in Justin Moore was out with the Achilles, and it would have been a huge opportunity blown if they wouldn't have been able to get that win.
With that being said, the whole result did not shock me because I was like, you know, they don't have that guy. And I felt like going in, even with him, I mean, it probably would have been a tighter game, but I felt like Kansas was the better team. No disrespect to Villanova. We've talked about how, you know, good they are under Coach Jamie Wright, and, you know, they're perennial powerhouse. Let's face it. They're fighting right there with the Blue Bloods year in, year out for the last 10 years or so. And they deserve to be there, but with the circumstances that were presented to them and with the matchup, I didn't like the matchup in Villanova's favor. So I knew that game out of the two, and everyone, of course, was going to look at the Tar Heels and the Blue Devils as the marquee game. And there always is that game, right? Like, which is the better semifinal game? And that one stood out. But that first game, Kansas and Villanova, I thought Kansas is going to be okay here. And I felt like that. I mean, way back when the Elite Eight was, I thought, you know, Kansas, I think, can make a strong push for a title, and here they are in the title game tonight. And I still believe that, and kind of foreshadowing who we're going to pick a little bit later. But so the result in that regard didn't shock me. But like I said, even if Villanova is full strength, I think Kansas still prevails. Might be a better game, though.
Yeah, the question mark was, can McCormick be able to move? I mean, he clearly had a huge advantage inside on offense, but would that be negated defensively, where they'd have to get him out on the floor, moving laterally, get him in pick and roll situations to where he couldn't stay in front of somebody? Mm-hmm. And the way the barrage started so early for Kansas, they just raced out to a huge lead. You never really saw him put in that position. Now, the couple of runs that Nova made, you could see the problem with having him out on the floor, because he couldn't stay with, you know, and then the big guys hit a couple of threes. What the lefty was his name? Slater. You know, he ended up 4 of 7 from three. But by that time, you know, the die was already kind of cast with Kansas just being able to run away from Nova, and they always had an answer. And Christian Brown hit the huge shot when it went down up 7 with a few minutes left. Shot clock was down to nothing, and he hits a fall-away 30-footer that was really the dagger. You know, that was the end when he hit that shot. But, yeah, Kansas was great, and it'll be interesting tonight when we get to that. They don't enjoy the same matchup advantages tonight inside that they clearly enjoyed against Nova because of Baycott and some of those guys from Carolina. Now, the second game, it lived up to every bit of the hype, if not exceeded it. Duke Carolina was phenomenal. There was a couple of times, especially to start the second half, where you thought, okay, well, this is it for Carolina. Mm-hmm. Great run, heck of a first half. You know, they battled back down 3 at halftime, and then Duke came out and built a lead, but then here they came again. And they had, you know, R.J. Davis did it in the first half to kind of keep them afloat, keep them there. And then Caleb Love took over in the second half with 22 of his 27 or whatever it was. And Carolina was able to kind of hit the last shot. I mean, that from about, what was it, about 2.5 minutes down till Love hit that three. I mean, it was back and forth and big shot after big shot after big shot after big shot. It was so much fun. You know, you'd had Keels hit the three for Duke, and Brady Manick came right back and hit a three. And then, you know, Duke cut it to one, and then you know, Love hit that big top of the key three that was really kind of the difference with a couple of free throws. And you know, when you look at what the difference was in a game that was that tight, Duke 12 of 20 from the free throw line, Carolina 17 of 24. You know, it's 72% versus 60%. Mark Williams missed those two huge free throws down inside a minute, and Carolina just had the last shot, and so they knock out Duke, knock out Coach K with a fantastic game, 81-77.
And again, you summed it up with how incredible that game was. You would hope a game would live up to the hype. A lot of times it doesn't happen that way. This one, in my opinion, did. I was reactive. I was like, man, top five games I've ever sat down and just watched in college basketball. It felt like that at the time, and then after reflecting on it, it's up there. It's up there. It's one of those games I'll always circle back. Man, that was one of the best NCAA tournament basketball games ever, that we witnessed on Saturday night. Because just that in that second, that run right there in the second half, the lead changes. How many were there, like 15?
Ended up being like 18, I think.
Yeah, and you know, when one would hit a three, you think, well, that's the run that's going to start it, and they're going to seal it. Then the other team would hit a three and cut it down or retake the lead. You know, and you felt like if a team had a five-point lead, that would be it because it was so tight. The up and downs. It's just fun. I can imagine being a Carolina or Duke fan watching that game. I would have had a heart attack, man.
Yeah, I know. That's.
We could equate it to. Equate it to this. It's like the OU Texas game, football.
Yeah, or Bedlam. I mean,
Bedlam, but it's in the playoffs.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah, it's like having a Bedlam Final Four game.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah. But you're talking Bedlam Final Four in basketball?
Yeah. Or OU Texas in football.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, that is basketball. That is a blue blood of basketball. You're talking about blue blood of football. You could OU Texas in the college football playoff in the semifinal game. It'd be something like that, and then you had a back and forth game. I mean, that's I guess how you could equate it. But
yeah, it'd be like if the Georgia game was against Texas.
Sure.
From the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
If that Rose Bowl was against Texas.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of Georgia.
Yeah. But just watching that game as just a neutral fan, you know, we might have leaned one way or the other, maybe because of the Brady Manic factor or if you love or hate Coach K or whatever. But I try to take myself out of all that just to enjoy a game. And I tell my wife after the game, I was like, man, that is how a game is supposed to be played. That was just fun for me to enjoy, to watch. So thank you, Duke and North Carolina, for giving us a fun game on Saturday night.
I thought Kenny Smith, after it was over, he was obviously elated because he's a Carolina guy. But I thought something he said was right on the money. And it was you didn't want, because of what that game meant and what it all embodied with Duke Carolina, with K being done, with the first time they ever met in the tournament, being a Final Four. You didn't want it to come down to somebody on either team losing it. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen. I mean, you can point to free throw misses and all that, but the truth is Caleb Love ripped Duke's heart out with a great play, knocking down that three at the top of the key.
Yeah.
That he just ripped their heart out. It's not a Weber moment. It's nothing even close to that for the losing team. Yeah, okay, yeah, Mark Williams missed a couple free throws. But at the end of the day, Caleb Love won it for Carolina. And that game deserved something like that to happen. I'm so glad. I was so nervous. We were even texting. I was so nervous with about two and a half minutes left that one of the officials was going to ruin it. Mm-hmm. And we all know which way it would have went, right?
Of course. I mean, I about said that, yeah, too, and I didn't.
I'm glad it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And they let the guys decide it in Carolina. Hit one more shot, and it was a fantastic game. Let's look ahead to tonight.
I felt, well, real quick, the final thought, I felt smart when they said it in the postgame, your Michigan postgame, when they were talking about Manic's defense on Bancaro. I thought I was seeing, like, man, he is really playing good
defense. A couple of times down the stretch, he forced a tough shot, and then also something else that's going to go completely overlooked because he didn't grab the rebound. But on a couple of those missed free throws by Duke, he's blocking out Bancaro mm-hmm. and allowing somebody else to grab it
and
to come in and get the rebound. And so those were, you know, those were big plays that are never going to get noticed in the score in the box score.
No.
When you look up, you go, oh yeah, well Brady, he had 14, hit three threes.
And again, because of where he's from and his history, I kept focusing in on him, like stuff like
that.
He
missed a couple big free throws too.
He did down, yeah. There, I thought, yeah, man, what
one out, out of four like, in the last 3 minutes or whatever. Yeah.
Somebody texted me, said, "Well, that's classic Manic." One of the Manicators out there texted me, so there's classic Manic. Come on, man.
Was he texting you when he buried that three from the left wing to take?
I
the
didn't
lead
even
back?
Respond when that happened. I wanted to.
Probably didn't. Yeah. Probably didn't hear much. What do you think about tonight?
I would hope, and this was also said in the post game. I think Grant Hill said it. I would hope that Saturday night's classic doesn't take away from tonight, meaning North Carolina did everything they could to beat their rival on the biggest stage, and then they got nothing left in the tank. That, you know, that emotionally, you know, they're drained. And they're not ready for tonight, and Kansas takes advantage and wins.
Which seems really weird because it's a national title game, but I know exactly. They even compared the Duke upset of UNLV and how that had to they had to come back.
Right. So, with that being said, hopefully that's not the case, and we get 100% focused teams tonight. The magic that's North Carolina, listen, I don't care if they're an 8 seed. Who cares? They're North Carolina. I think we all are not shocked that they're here. And then there's Kansas. Again, I like Kansas. I've liked Kansas since the Elite Eight, seeing who was left, I think, and then what region they're in. I thought, man, they can make a heck of a run, and here they are. So I'm not going to go away from that. I know there's people who hate that because of the allegations against them, blah, blah, blah. But on the court, I got to go with Kansas. I think Kansas – but I don't think North Carolina is just going to back down. I think Carolina is going to give them – because they're rolling. They are absolutely rolling. I think size is a big thing. But I like the way Kansas shoots. If they can shoot like they did Saturday night, it gives them a heck of a chance to beat Carolina tonight for the title.
Yeah, it's an interesting matchup because I think Carolina has an answer for McCormick with Baycott that Villanova didn't have. Who guards Abaji? Is it Manic? Can Manic stay with Abaji?
Well, if he can stay with Mancaro.
It's a totally different animal.
Well, I know, but...
Totally different. That's a matchup that's kind of... And then the KU guards against the UNC guards. I think when you look at it, KU has the defensive advantage at the guard spot. Carolina's guys are way better on offense. And, you know, because I count Abaji as more of a wing as opposed to a guard. Does that make sense? Like a small forward type. I'm talking about Brown and Martin and those guys against Love and Davis. I give the advantage to Carolina there and Black. But KU can guard. And that's where I think that's where this game is won or lost. The inside play negates itself. I think which guard tandem or threesome can really score the ball. Can Carolina create the shots against the KU defense? Or can't they? You know what I mean? I think that's what it comes down to because Kansas's guards are so good on the defensive end. And we'll see if they can or they can't. But I think that's where it's at. And I don't know, man. There's just I think everything kind of points to KU. The intangible advantages point to them with what you said about, you know, Carolina coming off the high of that win and how hard it's going to be. And all that, but there's something about this Carolina team. There's something about Hubert Davis, you know, and there's something there. And I think it's going to be a good one. I think Carolina's going to beat them.
Okay.
And the question is,
when you get back from the beach,
does Roy have a Tar Heel and a Jayhawk on his shirt tonight? Because you know he's going to be.
Yeah.
If I were you, by the way, listeners, if I were you, I would not play the, hey, let's take a shot every time they show Roy Williams game tonight.
Oh, I know.
You may not make it to halftime.
No.
Should be a good one, though. Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge.
Still up for grabs?
It is still up for grabs. Okay. Two people have Kansas, and they can pass Jordan, who's leading right now with Duke as our champion. Right. We'll get to the Thunder stuff with Jim. I'm sure he wants to talk about that. Let's do Masters. I mean, Tiger's playing, right?
Well, he is a game time decision, quoting him, right?
That's what he said.
Listen, he's not there if he's not playing, in my opinion. If he hasn't left yet, if he hasn't put out the definitive no, My guess is yes. He's going to give it a go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Him being there tells me he's playing. Played some holes yesterday, hit some balls. Going to do it again. Going to play a few holes today.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, it's not like it's going to be. I like his approach. He's like, yeah, I'm addressing it. I'm here. I'm just going to give it a go. And game time decision. It's not one of those secretive things. And then all of a sudden he's just going to emerge from the shadows on Thursday, and people are going to go crazy. You know, that I'm glad he's approaching it like this. And I think before Thursday, we'll hear if he's going to yay or nay. I don't think it'll be a game time. I think it'll be like a day before time.
Well, I mean, he's already he's scheduled to visit with the press tomorrow.
There you go.
So he's on the, you know, he's at least on the group.
So I think he will.
I mean, I would imagine right then is where it'll be confirmed.
Yeah, yeah.
If not before. Listen, I'm not going to rule anything out with that guy at this course, but it's hard to see him being in the mix come the weekend. A made cut, which he's never missed the cut at Augusta in 21 tries as a pro. 21 tries, he's at 14 top 10s, he's won it 5 times, never missed the cut. And so just the familiarity and all that, you could see him making the cut, but I mean you're not thinking there's going to be some sort of magical run, are you?
No, I think if he made the cut, that'd exceed my expectations.
Oh, like, see, for me, I think if he's playing, he thinks in his mind he can win, which that's just the way he thinks.
If you don't think like that, why even? You know, yeah. That's the winner's mentality.
Well,
should think that.
It's always his mentality,
right?
But realistically, I mean, just being somewhere, you know, around. I mean, obviously, he's going to get shown on camera because he's Tiger Woods, but being able to be shown hitting shots on the weekend that actually matter and not just because you're Tiger, I think that would be a huge win. And if anything more would be icing on the cake, but I will say this: after all that, I would never go to a no chance level with that guy at this course, just because magical things happen at Augusta with certain people, and he's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's really going to be in the mix. So, who do you want to see win? If you could choose the winner, who do you want it to be?
Can I give you, like, answer A and answer B?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I would love, and I know everyone questions his, and you've questioned it, his short game, but I'd love to see Hovland in the mix. And then, you know, with the Oklahoma blood, I've even seen some writers kind of make answer a dark horse in this thing. So a couple Oklahoma ties. I mean, I think that'd be fun for us locally to see two of those guys be right there on Sunday. So I guess answer one is Victor Hovland, because I think he has a better chance than answer. But answer's been he's you never know. He can go on a run, and he's playing good golf. So one of those two. Heavy lean Hovland, though. How about you?
Yeah, this is interesting because I was thinking this name too. Of course, he's not even playing, though. I don't think he's qualified. I don't think Ricky Fowler's in the field. For me, honestly, for me, who I want to see win? I want to see Rory McIlroy win. I want to see Rory finish off the career Grand Slam. This has been a place ever since that 2010 Masters where he held a 4-shot lead standing on the 10th tee. And he hit it over there in the cabins that nobody even knew they were there. It seems like there's been some demons for him. So if I could choose who would win, I think I would choose Rory. I like him. I've always liked him. And just one of those things, it's cool to see guys kind of get to a certain level, and that puts you at a whole different level when you can say that you've won the career Grand Slam. There's only like 3 or 4 guys that have ever done it. So,
of course.
You know, and he's been one of those. He's had multiple chances here, hasn't really been in the mix, and he hadn't been playing very good, honestly, coming in, and maybe that's a good thing, where he's not necessarily at the top of the heap headed in.
Yeah.
So that's who I would, if I could choose a winner, that's who I'd choose.
Okay.
All right, are you ready to pick, or do you want me to pick, and then you can pick later on in the week?
Man, I might need to let this marinate for me to make a pick later in the week. That's
okay.
What I need to
that's
do.
Fine. I will pick number one, Justin Thomas. He has been so close all year long. He's played as good or better than everybody out there. I know Scheffler's won like 3 out of 5, but Thomas has been right there and easily could be the same guy. He just needs to put every single thing together, and I think he can do it. So I've got Justin Thomas as my number one pick. I'll take Cam Smith second, coming off the Players' Championship win. He's one of the only guys, I think he's the only guy that's ever shot 4 rounds in the 60s around Augusta National in the Masters. Of course, he did it in the fall in 2020 when DJ won, but I'll take Cam Smith second. I'll take Colin Morikawa third. Ball striker's paradise. He can strike it as good as anybody on the face of the earth. And so I'll take Morikawa third. And then as a dark horse, which anybody outside the top 25, let me see. I'm looking for a guy. Make sure he's outside. Did I miss him? He's got to be somewhere in here.
I'm looking with you. You want to tell me who? And
yeah, here it is. Taylor Gooch. I'll have a little local flavor with Taylor Gooch as my dark horse.
Okay.
So I've got JT. No, I didn't have Rom. I had JT. Who else?
I'm sorry.
No, Cam Smith. JT, Cam Smith, Morikawa, and Taylor Gooch. That's who I picked.
Okay. You know, I've had those names. I might as well pick while you're here. Because I've had those names floating around. And I think I alluded to it. Was it last week when we're kind of hinting at the Masters talk? So I'll go with mine.
Okay.
John Rahm is my pick, number one. He just seems more cool, calm, and collect, playing good golf. And you went with JT? I actually had him number two. Is that legal?
I can't remember.
Can you pick the same guys? So Justin Thomas, too. Your dark horse was?
Gooch.
Okay. Number three, I almost put him as my dark horse, but I don't think I can. Looking at the rankings. Cam Smith.
Cam Smith, number six. Yeah, he can't be your dark horse.
Yeah, I can't do that. He still feels like a dark horse, though, even at number six. But my dark horse is a guy that I picked when he won it, and I always give him love for this, is Adam Scott.
Yeah, I almost had him. I saw him as I was looking for Taylor Gooch. They were right there together. Okay, we got him picked.
Okay.
Jim's coming up
next.
I'm
writing him down, so can't go back now.
So Justin Thomas wins, I win. Because I picked him first and you picked him second,
sure.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, our man Billy chiming in. He'll take Kansas. He was torn between Kansas and Duke on Friday.
Well, he has to take
Makes
Kansas.
An easy choice now, yeah. Doesn't it? So they'll take Kansas. Joining us now, though, is the voice you're going to hear right here on these airwaves at 2 o'clock. It's the ultimate Jim Traber. Jim, how are you doing, man?
Good, fellas. You get some rain out there?
We did. Friday night, it got some rain, and it's hadn't quite helped my allergies all the way, but it's sure starting to clear them up, so that's nice. And obviously the fires that were up northwest of us last week, I know they got some rain out there as well, so hopefully that'll kind of nip that in the bud until the next time it'll rain coming up, hopefully here as soon as possible.
Yeah, we're supposed to maybe get more rain today, too. So that's a good thing, very good thing.
Speaking of good things, your poker game right now. Tell us, I saw on Instagram, again, you have won a tournament.
I did. I went down to Winstar on Saturday. It's a $300 buy-in tournament, and it was a good tournament. They got a little bit of, we got over 80 players, and I won it. I mean, it's crazy. You know, when you run good, you know, people think when I say, well, you know, you're going to run good, you got to keep playing because, you know, you got lucky or whatever. Well, sure, there's a lot of luck, but I was listening to this guy that I follow on Instagram, was a great poker player. His name is Faraz Jaka, and he was saying, because he's running really good right now, and he was saying, you know, when you run good, you feel more confident. You exude that confidence towards other people. And he's right, man. You just feel good. If you're sitting down and you're thinking, gosh, am I going to get bad cards? And by the way, at the beginning of the tournament, I did. I got the very first hand I got, a dude hit a flush on the river against me. I lost a decent amount of my stack right off the bat. And then later I had another bad hand. So I was down early and then just started rolling. So, yeah, won another tournament. Very, very nice to win. Julie feels a lot better about my poker tournament when I win a little bit, you know, instead of just keep going and being just coming home with nothing.
So how much do you, like, you know you're running good. So how much do you kind of not overplay, but make sure you play enough to take advantage of running this good?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, it's actually not a problem. I'm glad that I've got a wonderful job. But, you know, I mean, I would really, really love to be – I'd rather be playing a poker tournament today. Nothing against you guys, nothing against my job. But when you're running good, you want to keep playing. So Julie and I are looking at what we might do this weekend. We might go somewhere small and go play in another tournament. But, yeah, it was really nice to go down there and come home. It's a wonderful feeling when you see a bunch of people, whether it's 80 or whether it's 600. But when it's over, you know you're the only one standing. That's a pretty cool feeling to have, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Speaking of the only one standing, there's two left in the final four. Let's start with the last game on Saturday. You don't see games like that live up to the hype very often, but Duke Carolina absolutely did. The last couple of minutes was just a flurry back and forth. Carolina hit the one more shot with Love at the top of the key, and Carolina gives Coach K his first loss, gives him his last loss in Cameron, and gives him his last loss in his career, knocking him out of the Final Four. Crazy stat that K was 50-50 against Carolina in his career, but a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, and I'm glad he's 50-50 and done. Glad he's out. So happy that North Carolina beat him. It's a perfect way for him to go out, like you said, to lose to North Carolina. And what a game, though. That was a tremendous basketball game. North Carolina is a talented team. In the beginning of the year, they weren't playing very well. Everybody was getting on to Hubert Davis. Boy, I just love the way he talks, man. He sounds like a big-time Christian man who loves his players and coaches the game hard. So that's really, really cool. Having said all that, I think Kansas is the better team. I thought Kansas was the best team in this thing when it came down to the Final Four.
Maybe because it was the only one I had in the Final Four. Maybe that's why. But I
think Kansas wins tonight. But I will say that North Carolina is impressive, man. They really are. They really are. They do some good things, and I'm really happy for Brady Manick. So either side I'll be happy for tonight, you know.
Okay, let's – on the court, it looks like it could be a fun game. Off the court, I got to ask this question. If Kansas wins, is it bad for the sport because of all the allegations against them?
Yeah, I mean, sure it is. But I mean, but this is the way the NCAA is. I mean, I love Bill Self, but it's obvious that he did something wrong. And they should be in trouble. Meanwhile, OSU can't, you know, get to the tournament for some daggone reason. They're not allowed to. And here's Kansas just rolling along. You know, this is—it's a really, really sad state of affairs, and it's a really bad lesson to teach. That if you say we didn't do anything and just fight it, then it's better for you than to just say, you know what, we did. Yeah, what are you going to do to us? That's what's happened here because Oklahoma State said, "Yep, no doubt he did it. Let's show what happened. Boom, boom, boom," and then they get what they get. And then Kansas says, "We didn't do a daggone thing. We're going to fight it." And it's obvious that they did. And look at them. They're in the national championship game. That's a really sad – I'm sorry. It's a really sad state of affairs, if you ask me.
There's no doubt. And I think that's why everyone from OSU down was so frustrated by what happened to them. And it's because of that. It's because they actually did their due diligence, found out what happened, and cooperated every step of the way with the NCAA and then got a punishment that was beyond anything that anybody really thought was going to happen. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you've got coaches like LSU's Will Wade, who finally got fired. It's kind of ironic. This stuff's finally legal, and now he gets fired. Obviously, Sean Miller at Arizona. And then Self, those guys are on wiretaps talking about paying guys money, and nothing happens.
You're right. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, look, I got to tell it like it is, whether I know or like a guy or not. And I mean, something should be happening to Kansas. I don't know what it is, but something should be happening. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if they end up doing anything to them. I know they're not going to do anything to them today as they get ready to try to win the national championship.
Thunder last night, gosh, blew a golden opportunity. Amazing the emotions. I was telling Jared the other day, it's almost harder to watch a team that you're following try to lose. It's almost more intense watching them try to lose a close game than it is win one of those. But, you know, are the Thunder going about this all wrong? And here's what I mean. They're setting all their veterans, what little veterans they have, for dudes that are trying to figure out a way to stick in this league. And clearly they're not as good of players, but they're going to try hard. So is the Thunder going about this wrong by playing all these guys that are just playing their tails off, trying to find a spot somewhere next year?
I mean, it's a really interesting point, but I'll ask a question back to you. What else are they supposed to do?
Right.
Are they supposed to go on the go find a bunch of old dudes and bring them in? Or I don't know. I mean, I've been on them all year long. I think early in the season, I think they've won games that they shouldn't have won.
Mm-hmm.
But, dude, the third ripping off a triple-double? I mean, is that what we're counting on now? Phoenix really didn't care, obviously. And they didn't even play Booker. So, I keep saying it, but it's a bad win. And then there's Detroit, man. Detroit's just rolling along. They're playing well, trying to give the Thunder every possibility to finish third. And the Thunder won't do it. So, I don't know. I think Detroit's going to win a game or two more. I don't know if the Thunder will. You'd like to see the Thunder lose. So it would be really nice if they could just get it over with and at least solidify third.
Well, the bad news is they still have the Lakers on their roster or on their schedule, and they're a dumpster fire. They could very well win that one right there. It's so frustrating. Do they just need to go in there and blatantly say, guys, lose? Or are they just stuck between a rock and a hard place?
Yeah, because the players aren't going to do it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible to tell it. I mean, I can't imagine if I got to the big leagues when I finally fought my tail off my whole life to get to the big league, if someone would have come up to me and said, "Hey, listen, we want you to make outs today. You know, don't get any hits, okay?" I mean, that would be crushing. So you can't tell these young kids not to do what they're going to do. But I'm like I said, there were games before where Kendrick Williams was playing too much and Muscala was playing. These games at the end, I'm not going to get upset about. I'm upset about the games back then. You know, there's that old saying, it's kind of a baseball saying, if you do something early in the season, it's the same as doing it late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened here. I mean, I'm sorry. I think that there were two or three games that they could have very easily lost if he wouldn't have brought dudes. He brought them back in. I mean, I can't even remember who they played, but there was one game where they went up two with about 4 minutes to go. And it was a really close game, and then here I look over, and here comes Kendrick Williams and Muscala back in the game, and they end up winning the game. Leave him on the bench. Just stuff like that. And I know Mark Rogers screams at me that they're not superstars. I know they're not superstars, but they're really good winning basketball players, in my opinion. Give the young kids. If the young kids win, so be it. So I think they blew it earlier in the season. But, you know, if they can get third, if they can figure out a way to get third, then I guess that'd be good, but they could have very easily been one or two if they would have done it the right way.
Yeah, you think back to, what was it, a 28-point comeback against the Lakers and then a 20-something point comeback like twice against them. And it gets harder to lose these games because at the end of the year, no matter who's on the schedule, like last night, Phoenix, they're not playing for anything. They've cinched up home court throughout, so it's easy for them to rest guys. And, of course, if you're going to play Portland like's coming up, they're not trying to win either. So it makes it harder to lose these games at the end of the year than it would have been just to say, okay, we're down 20, throw in the towel, let's take the L and move on back in November or December.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we are finding out over these last 2 years that tanking not only is bad for us, but it's hard. It really is, and unless you just want to ruin your team totally. But you got to keep some guys, right? You want to have some guys when you finally bring a couple in. So you got to keep the guys that can play and do the best job that you can do. I just think the tanking is over, man. I don't know, man. I hate to be negative Nancy, but they're going to have to get really, really lucky, fellas, to be back in a situation where they're fighting to be a big-time playoff team. I mean, I think next year if they get some good kids in this draft, they get lucky. I think next year they can fight to be at the bottom of the play-in. But as I've talked about on the air many times, you know, I don't want to see mediocrity. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of fans out there that do. They're fine with, if they get to the playoffs and get a couple playoff games. I don't want to see that. I want to see a team that's fighting their tails off to be a top four seed and to have a chance. I'm not saying they got to win it, but have a chance to be involved. And I just don't know. I don't know. You know, they got to get lucky. They're going to have to get really lucky. They got unlucky last year. Well, actually, they got lucky, which made them unlucky.
Yeah.
You know, they win the coin toss, which was bad. Ended up being bad. But if they could just get lucky this year and maybe get like one or two and get one of these big time players, that would be great.
All right, Masters Week kicks off today. How shocked are you that we're going to see Tiger Woods on the course?
So he is definitely playing?
Well, I mean, don't you think? He's there. He's going through the preparation like he is. He's going to be on the the press conference tomorrow at like 11 in the morning. I mean, it feels like he's playing. So, let me rephrase it. If he plays, how shocked are you that he's actually going to be there playing?
I mean, it's just ridiculous, and I cannot believe if he plays that he's gonna. I mean, there was talk about the possibility of him maybe losing his leg, and now he's gonna play in the Masters. And you know, I mean, if he's gonna play, he has to feel pretty confident that he's not gonna go out there and stink it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think he would like to. Like, if he goes out and shoots, 79, 77. I mean, that would not look good. People are going to be going, hey, dude, why'd you play, you know? So, I don't know, man. Leave it to this guy, right? I mean, if someone's going to do it, I said this on the radio the other day, maybe he has two souls. Maybe he sold his soul to the devil again. You know, he already sold it to win the daggone thing. Maybe he's done it again. So, he is, he's an amazing person, and we'll see. I mean, I know one thing. We're not going to miss one of his shots.
Yeah.
Mark that down. They'll be playing it on every channel.
Well, he is a Tiger. He has nine lives, right? So he has.
Yeah.
Does that count as souls? I don't know. Outside of that distraction, who do you like? I mean, who are you going to be keying in on this week at Augusta?
Oh, I mean, Thomas has been playing really well. Help me out now, because I just watched Bo Hostler from Texas all day yesterday. Who's the kid who's the number one in the country in the world now?
Scheffler.
That dude is unbelievable, fellas. He is, I mean. Every single time you look up, he's on the leaderboard. He may not win it every time, but he is there. And I'm going to be interested to see how his short game, because he's got a tremendous short game, and that's what you need there at Augusta. He's winning so much, it's going to be hard for him to, but I would think that he's going to be there. I'm interested to see what Rahm does, you know. Koepka, I mean, is Koepka going to get back? You know, is Koepka going to start playing? Because Koepka doesn't win anything except majors, and he's kind of been falling back, you know. So I think a lot of those kind of guys will be up there. I'm excited about watching it, though. Love watching me some Masters.
Victor Hovland's a guy that I know a bunch of people are going to be rooting for around these parts. I don't believe, at least right now in his career, that he has the game to win at Augusta, because the pitch shots that you have to hit and you have to have multiple ways to hit them, it just seems like that is his Achilles heel right now, not being able to, you know, he hits the ball great, and he's one of the better ball strikers, and maybe he can just ball strike his way to winning it, but I don't think so, because the pitch shots, the little short game shots, it seems like he really has trouble with, especially the more pressure that starts to mount as we move along in these tournaments.
No doubt. Got to get up and down. Got to get up and down there. You're going to miss some of those greens, and you got to get up and down. And if the greens are rolling good, you know how hard it is to chip it up there and get the right length on your chips and things. So I agree with you. I think he's going to have a hard time. But I do think that the dude can play. I think he's going to win some things down the road. I mean, I do. I think he's going to win some majors. But, yeah, it'd be hard. It'd be hard to go in there with that kind of game and win it. But he's got to work on it. He's got to get better, you know. That's what he's got to do. He's got to get better. He's got to end up getting a better short game to win there.
Yeah, he reminds me of Lee Westwood with the way, like, his technique is just kind of that, you know, just hit the same little pitch shot every time and not necessarily spin it, not necessarily go way high like a flop. It's just kind of a standard little pitch, and there's certain times where that just doesn't work around Augusta National.
No, you're right. It's exactly right. You got to have all the shots to win at this golf course. That's why Tiger is so good there, because at most of the time in his career, he had all the shots.
You know why this week is also awesome, Aaron, is because baseball starts.
Yeah.
And today, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, you got your preview show coming up this afternoon, right?
Yep, baseball preview show today at 3:00. Excited about it. Tim Kurchin, the newly named Hall of Famer, will be joining us along with Phil Rogers and Mark Rogers. That will be the threesome. And so I've just been kind of doing a little bit of late studying here this morning, kind of just looking at who I think I'm going to like. I don't know. There's so many people moving all over the place, and they're getting there late. And this guy has not played with this team and all these other things. It's going to be really interesting to try to pick this year. But I know one team that will be in the playoffs, and that's the Dodgers. You can mark that down.
is there somebody that maybe you think that you're going to like more than everybody else on the show from any of the different divisions?
Well, you know, last year the Dodgers and the Giants, the Giants were the most unbelievable story in all of baseball. But I got to, and I think I got to tell you, I might push my boy Bo Mel, man, Bob Melvin. I think he's one of the best baseball guys around. He goes down there to San Diego. I know this Tatis thing is kind of messed up. I don't know. I have a feeling that he's going to have them playing good baseball, even though people think the other two are going to be better than them. So maybe San Diego. Maybe I'll be a little high on them. I like Toronto. They lost guys, and then they brought guys in. Chapman, I think, can really hit, so I think he'll help them at third base. But I don't know. It's hard to tell who's going to go with what, you know. I mean, sometimes these guys, they'll bring a team that you don't really expect, especially our man Phil Rogers, so I'm excited about it.
Staying in baseball, what a devastating loss for Oklahoma yesterday, up 7-1 in the seventh inning, and then a couple of errors led to a buku of runs. And next thing you know, Texas comes back, scores 11 in a row to beat them 12-8. Not only was that a bad loss for Oklahoma, but maybe even a bad loss for OSU down the stretch in a game that OU should have won, and that puts Texas at 2-4 versus OSU's 5-1. Now, all of a sudden, it's not quite as big of a gap between the Longhorns and the Cowboys after Texas came back to win that game.
That's a good point, really is. You know, it's hard to sweep somebody on the road, so OSU, you know, they lose that last game. It's a shame. A lot of times you just want to get home after winning the first two, which is, you know, you don't want to do that, but that's a tough one. OU, I mean, they beat OSU. You know, they're playing a tough schedule. They got Oklahoma State coming up again here soon. They're playing some tough games, and they're hanging in there. But, yeah, man, the difference between 2-1 and 1-2 is a big difference, especially against Texas. But I think OU has a chance, you know, to be a tournament team. I think they're going to have to beat some of these teams. They're going to have to beat the key is beating Kansas State. You know, I'd like to see OSU 6-0 against those two, but they're 5-1, and you got to. That's good. That's the kind of thing that OU has to do too. But when you're up 7-1, you should win the baseball game. And Texas made a great comeback. I will say this: I was talking about it last week, guys. Really, really surprising to me that OU sold that daggone series, fellas.
Yeah,
it's just mind-boggling to me.
Is that that has to be an indictment on the fans in Norman coming to the games, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, it has to do with how much money Globe Life Field will pay you, as opposed to what you can do on your home field, and that means that no one's coming to the games and no one's spending money, and it's worth more for them to play down there. I mean, I watched the game. There were so many more Texas fans down there, fellas. It was unbelievable. I mean, what you do to your team is so unfair to Skip Johnson. I understand. I'm not ripping jokes at Diglione or anybody else. I just think that OU baseball is in a sad state of affairs, fellas, when you are selling. They sold the OSU game, too. That was supposed to be in Norman. They sold it to Tulsa. You know? I don't know if you guys know that, too. They were home team up there. That was a selling of the game, too. So I don't. That's really a man. I'm going to talk to Joe Castiglione about it. But obviously, we know what it is. It's about money, and you really would like to see. I mean, they're dying to get into the OSU. I mean, the OU softball game. But Sounds like nobody wants to go to the OU baseball game. That's a shame.
Yeah, and what's crazy is they haven't been horrible. I mean, they may not have been as good as they were, you know, in the mid to late 90s or whatever, but it's not like they've been at the bottom of the league over and over. I mean, they've been in the tournament most years. It's fascinating, and I think you hit maybe the nail on the head. There's only so many dollars to go around or so much attention for OU fans in the spring, and the softball team has gobbled up every bit of that airspace.
Well, the people are front runners. I mean, if I've got $50 to spend, am I going to go spend it on a team that might get in the tournament, or am I going to spend it on a team that's by far the number one team in the country?
Right.
You know? I just think that people are front runners. You're going to go with the people that win it. So maybe I know OU baseball's got to start winning more, But I just think it's just sad that they think it's worth more to sell it than there is to play it at home. That's what brought it up the other day. That's what Kansas does with OU. Obviously OU baseball is not where Kansas State football used to be, but I don't know. That's a little bit sad for me. Yeah, I'll tell you this: if OSU baseball was doing something like that, fellas, I would be livid. Don't forget now that stadium down there is terrible. I mean, it's not any good. Baseball, OSU's got this beautiful stadium, and OU's is not any good. So they're going to have to figure something out, and I don't think anything's going to happen real soon.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Facilities is a big part of it too, in my opinion. When you're falling behind to your in-state rival, and then when they get to the SEC, and you're going to see some of those stadiums, and then you got what OU has, they have to address that to get the fans to come back and want to come back to OU baseball.
Well, you know what, Jared? Let me tell you this. It's a great point you bring up. If over the next 3 or 4 years they do not address their stadium, they could listen closely. There's going to be OU fans that are mad, and I'm getting ready to say this. They could become a bottom feeder in the SEC, guys.
Oh, easily.
They could. I mean, first of all, that stadium will be, I believe, dead last in the entire league. If not, it's second to last. But, and these teams, I mean, they care about baseball at these places. You know, I mean, Arizona, I mean, you think Arkansas is going to sell something? They're bringing in 10,000 people a game. They're not going to sell their games to somebody else, so. Oh, you've got a dilemma here as far as baseball. Softball, they're going to be fine. They're going to walk in there and be the best team in the entire league. Football, we all know, they're going to be top three in the league. But baseball, they could be in some big trouble. I mean, big trouble. You go in and start a league as a bottom feeder, fellas. That's not a good way to start off.
No, it's not. And men's basketball is kind of teetering on that for a little bit of the same reasons, too, with the Lloyd Noble Center, and there's been lots of talk about that forever. About how to upgrade that or do something different, and it's going to be right there at the bottom of the SEC as well when OU gets there.
Yeah, like the arena will be. You're right, but at least basketball wise, they'll be better than a decent amount of teams in there. You know, like Vanderbilt, Missouri, and some of those teams. They're going to be better than most of them, not most of them, but some of them. South Carolina, at least they'll be better than some of the teams. But baseball. I mean, fellas, they're not going to. Not only are they not going to be good stadium wise, they're not going to be better than many of the teams. That league is serious now.
What do you got coming up on the podcast today? Round two with the governor.
Part two of the governor and his wife. I don't know if you guys have heard the first one. Boy, his wife was so good. You never really get to hear her talk, and she just talked and talked, and it was wonderful. And she's going to be great as well. And it's. I'm excited. We got some new. Guests that are going to be coming up that I'll be mentioning here in a while. So we got some other people. I'm excited about it. It's a Julie and Jim Traver podcast. Julie and Jim Traver podcast. If anybody wants to go online, you can go to sportsanimal.com or anywhere where you can get a podcast and watch it. The second one will be coming out today.
All right, man. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. Congrats on another poker win, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, fellas, thanks so much. See ya.
You betcha. That's the ultimate Jim Traver joining us, as he does each and every Monday right here on The Skinny on Sports. He's rolling, man. He is rolling on the poker tables.
You're gonna get when us you're hot, you're hot, man. Don't mess with it.
All right, we got Billy. Billy likes Kansas. You like Kansas.
I like Kansas.
Yeah. I think I like North Carolina. You want to give a score?
Oh, no. I'm in the 70s. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be real close. I'll say 77-75.
God, that'd be awesome.
Close game, fun game, Kansas with the W.
How about this?
Where's your score?
Oh, I'm about to get it to you.
Oh, okay.
Abaji ties it with 3-something seconds left at 72. And Carolina runs the Villanova play and hits Brady Manick for the game winning 3.
Okay.
75-72.
Wow.
Carolina. Everybody have a great day. Have a great week. I'll be back Monday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way